From the studios at Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, and this Masters, the Monday after the Masters, excuse me, not Masters Monday, big difference, and after Scottie Scheffler's four-shot win to basically cement himself as a star, which we'll get to in a second. Joining us to dissect this Masters win, his second. Sorry, it was not Sean Fairholm's second Masters win, but
I wish.
He wishes, but from my golf spy, Sean Fairholm. Hello, sir.
Doing well and a bit of a post-Masters gloom, but an incredible tournament. It was awesome to watch.
I just want to give you a heads up. Sorry. I want to give the audience a heads up. Here, I saw on a different social feed that I'm looking at right now and can't see it that you gave tips for a family that could not attend the tournament for a long day, and they had a great one, and they thanked you.
I wrote a story on the perfect one day itinerary for people who have never been to the Masters before and who are going for the first time, and put my email down at the end of that story and had a few people reach out to me and. A few really nice stories of people who used some of my advice to enjoy the day. So one of them was a husband and wife. The wife was a college golfer who was 8 months pregnant and couldn't really walk that much, so designed an itinerary for them to see as much of the course as possible while sitting down in Amen Corner for most of the day. So, just a fun little article and got some really good feedback on it.
It's called The Perfect One-Day Itinerary for First-Time Masters Patrons. It's by Sean Fairholm. You can find it now on mygolfspy.com. You know who had a really nice view of everything yesterday?
Who was that?
Ted Scott. here's where I land, and I'm sure you saw that Data Golf is now looking at this Scottie run as just below Tiger in a 2000. Win, T2, win. We knew the ball striking was there, and the moment he signed up for Phil Kenyon as a short game / putting coach, I went, uh-oh, because this guy, whoever learns how to putt, this could be dangerous. Well, he now learns how to putt. And Sean, I tried to explain this yesterday to some people, and maybe you can say it better than I can. He's putting it in the right places. He's missing it in the right places. And the precision to a millimeter of which he is hitting his shots is just utterly sensational.
Yeah, to me, this is the best run that we've seen anyone go on. You look back to October 2022, he has one finish outside of the top 25 and basically almost coming up on 2 years of golf, practically a year and a half of golf. So he's just been remarkable. I mean, you look at the other runs that we've seen the past 10 years or so, you know, Koepka would show up for majors, but then not really do anything else. You know, you had John Rahm kind of get hot for a few months and then cool off. You had different guys kind of pop up, but this is the first time we've really seen someone be consistently great, playing golf that we have not seen since Tiger. Someone who is just every single tournament, they're basically guaranteed to be a factor. And it's pretty impressive to watch. I mean, I think we're really kind of witnessing greatness right now, and I think we're at the beginning of what we could see to be a really legendary career. I would personally put the over-under majors for Scotty around 6.5. I think he has that type of career ahead of him. I don't think we're in an era where there's a lot of superstars who are kind of peaking right now. I think he has a really good 5 to 10 year run where he can really put away a lot of these, and I think he's going to even challenge Arnie and Tiger possibly for green jackets. He's already got two. I could definitely see him winning a couple more of those.
I can definitely see the staff at Augusta National knowing exactly which green jacket to grab for the Butler Cabin Ceremony on CBS going forward. I think they may get very familiar with that sizing. Two things stood out to me yesterday in the Masters final round, which so remind me of Tiger, which is Oberg and Homa and Morikawa had their moments where they fell backwards. At the same time, Scotty, 9, 10, 13, 14, had his moments of going forward. You combine that together and you get a four-shot win. In a previous era, that's maybe a one or two-shot win for somebody. But he took advantage of those who found mistakes. And he hit the right shot at the right moment at the right time. And I keep saying that, but I think that just... it just felt like he had control of his ball the entire time. And then he says in the press room that he's saying to his friends yesterday morning, he still wonders if he's worthy enough. Like, dude, you're the best ball striker in the world. Come on.
What really kind of made me interested in how he won this is that through three rounds, his ball striking was not really that great.
No, it's
not.
I
think he was somewhere around 24th, I want to say, in the field, which is still above average. But he wasn't winning this tournament because he was playing his absolute best golf. He's a world-class iron player, maybe one of the best we've ever seen. He wasn't really on top of his game with that. But through three rounds, it was really his scrambling. He finished first in the tournament with scrambling. I mean, it's just insane how good of a chipper and pitcher he is, and his putting was above average, but not a liability. And his driving was really was phenomenal. But it's just incredible to me that he did not play as well as he could have in this golf tournament. He had the second and third round, and granted, the second round was very tough conditions. But he left a lot out there. He made a bad mistake on 10 in the third round, going over that green and making a double. There were moments where he did not look that great early in the Sunday round. He had some distance control issues early on, was way short on number one, way long on two, and you're kind of thinking, oh man, doesn't really look that great. And he beat everyone else except for Oberg by seven shots, and I don't think he played his best tournament. That's really the part that reminds me so much of Tiger, where Tiger would win tournaments, and he didn't necessarily have his peak weeks. We've seen guys like Morikawa go out and win majors, but they really, were lights out, way above baseline with putting or with another stat. And Scheffler is doing all of this just kind of being who he is, and that's pretty scary. I mean, I think there is a pretty real chance that he wins two or three majors this year.
Sunday 64 at the Players, and then he backed up Bay Hill last year with winning it this year with a work faster computer 66, and then yesterday shoots a where did that tab go? Wrong tab at the wrong time. Yesterday, 64, 66, I think I said, and then 68. He's shooting the right numbers, too. Like, that's the thing. He's gauging well where the course is, where the competitors is. And to your point, he beat everybody except Oberg by seven. And he's doing what he has to do. And that's really scary. That's like,
don't you get the feeling though that, so as you mentioned, we saw Morikawa, Oberg, Homa all make critical mistakes in that 11 to 12 stretch. Yeah. But don't you get the feeling that if they had not made those mistakes, Scotty could have gone out and he would have found whatever number he needed to get to.
1,000%.
He was so in control whole time.
You change the line on 13 a bit if you need to. You change your line on 15 a bit if you need to. In that case, you can be way more aggressive on 16 if you need to. Oh, yeah, he could have absolutely. And I think The thing to me that stands out about Scotty is, you know, he had Randy Smith out there after Saturday's round still grinding. He loves this game so much. He may be a flatliner to some on TV, but Sean Fairholm from My Golf Spy is with us. And he literally was out there grinding Saturday night with Randy because something didn't feel right. And I think those are also the greats who are like, wait a second, you just shot what and you're doing what? It's like the math doesn't add up, if that makes sense. And here the math is adding up in terms of majors won, successful rounds won. And I thought it was beautiful, that moment yesterday, walking off 18, when he tells Ted Scott, you go forward in front of me. You walk in front of me. Those two are so tight, and I just thought that that was gorgeous.
Yeah. How about four green jackets now for Ted Scott, which is
mind-boggling,
remarkable. And just going back to Scotty, just, you know, you think about longevity, because isn't golf so, you know, it's almost like an illusion sometimes where when Rory and Spieth were winning their majors, it didn't feel like they were going to get to 7, 8, 9 majors. Like, at that time, it felt like they could go on a run like that. Like, golf is an illusion sometimes when it comes to, you know, recency bias and seeing someone play well in that moment. But I feel like Scotty has a lot of things going for him that are a little bit different. You know, Spieth, in that run of 2015 to 2018 or so, he was a great iron player for a couple of those years, but he really rode his putting, and that was a bit of an outlier for his career. And then you look at Rory's run, and he wasn't really playing, I mean, the best competition at that time. He took advantage of some soft layouts. You look at Scotty, and first of all, he's winning on every single type of course. He's winning at place like Sawgrass, which is completely different from Augusta, which is completely different from Bay Hill. He's winning at all these places. He's not really someone who seems like they're driven by money. He doesn't seem like he's going to be a Dustin Johnson who, like, takes a big buyout and then just kind of sails off into the sunset. He doesn't seem very injury prone, and his swing is so fluid, kind of similar to, like, a Mickelson who has a very long career. Where is he going to get tripped up with all this? You would say the putting maybe, but if he can just be, he doesn't even need to be a good putter. He just needs to be like an average putter to win. So it's all the variables are really there for him to do whatever he wants to long term. Maybe some people say that, you know, being a parent would trip him up. I don't know. He just seems like he's very content and still very hungry, and doesn't seem like that hunger is going to just go away in a few years. It seems like it's going to be there for a long time.
And what I would say, too, to that is, even when he gets injured, he wins.
Yeah, exactly.
As a player wakes up on the wrong side of the pillow and needs some treatment, and next bothering him, and next thing we know, he's winning. You are a PGA professional, Sean. Some people may not know that about my guest here, Mr. Fairholm. How does that footwork work? That's the one thing. You talk about things that can trip him up. I worry he can trip himself up sometimes.
Literally.
Like, it is so bizarre, not the way that you're taught to do it, yet you do it every day. Like, how? How? Can you just briefly explain to the folks out there how?
Yeah, so I went to the Masters on Tuesday. I was lucky enough to go for one of the practice rounds, and it was kind of later in the day, and my friend and I sat at the driving range, and we were just kind of looking at guys.
Tournament practice facility.
Yes, tournament practice facility, my bad. And we were watching Scotty. Scotty came out there, and first of all, he just has this certain presence about him. He's, like, chatting with everyone. He just seems so content and at ease. But then you look at the golf swing, and I think when you're watching on TV, it looks a little bit awkward. And then when you watch in person, this is really one of my first times seeing him just hit balls in person, right, just over and over again. And it is so repeatable what he does. And I think people get a little bit lost with the footwork, but that is really all post-impact. Mm. He's really that's just kind of a result of everything that he, of where he gets his body to at Impact. It's not really something that is a part of, you know, like his downswing. He, I mean, he is, if you're looking at that window of exactly where you want to launch the ball, I mean, he's there. He's playing every single type of shot. I mean, we saw on 13 this week, how he hit a bunch of beautiful draws on 13 off the tee, 9 off the tee. Like, he can work the ball both ways. He likes hitting a fade more, but he can do whatever he wants. What about in the third round, when, or maybe it was the second round, I forget, but he was playing with Rory, or around Rory, and they both had two different shots into 11, and Scheffler hits like this perfect low singing shot to the corner of the green on 11, and Rory hits a shot that like balloons up into the air and goes into the water. And that's kind of the difference between the two of them, is Scotty's just able to control his trajectory and control his shot shape so well. And I think the footwork is like just a byproduct of getting his body into the right position on the downswing. I think it's just something that he does that is clearing his body out of the way, but it's not impacting how the club is entering into the hitting zone, which I think is, yeah, it doesn't look like every single shot he hits, it's like, oh, he just fell over like a little bit, but I think it's a little bit of an illusion.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you've said that. I like that illusion thought. I really like that illusion thought. Sean Fairholm's with us here on Teeing It Up from My Golf Spy. You texted me this morning basically that, oh my God, I want to come on the show, and Augusta popped. What does Augusta popped mean?
This was the best I've seen it play. I mean, I'm interested in your thoughts on this as well, but so, first of all, it was firm.
Yes.
And it was
very rare.
Yeah.
I mean, it changed colors. Those greens changed colors over the weekend, which you don't, you know, every time see.
But I think the other thing is when you get Augusta firm like that, really the precision that you need on approach play changes so much. I mean, there were a few holes out there where it just felt like you're on a razor-thin margin between making a birdie and a bogey. Like, good example was the 14th hole, where there were a couple of hole locations kind of on the back of that green where you could hit it over that green and you were kind of dead. But if you caught that backstop and funneled it in, you could easily make a three. And I think that's what really makes Augusta special, is you have all these shots where, you know, birdies and sometimes eagles they're on the table. They're right there. But also, if you make a mistake, you really pay for it dearly. And I think that's all as a golf fan you want to watch, is a course that has beautifully contoured greens that you're really looking for precision coming in. Good shots get rewarded and bad shots get penalized. And this was the best Masters from how the course played, in my opinion. It was really interesting, and not just because of the wind. The wind was kind of a cool element to have on Friday. It played extremely hard, but I liked the whole tournament. I thought it was they got it really as good as it could get. There are still a couple of holes out there I'd like to see changed, but for the most part, I think it's the best golf course in the world for tournament golf. That's how I feel.
The way that I feel is that, number one, your dog Hogan should be able to go over the Hogan Bridge.
Well, that's obvious. That's just obvious.
That's an obvious change that should happen. Number two is, I feel like this kind of became a U.S. Open there for a little bit by accident, not by anybody's doing. And they said that they softened the greens on Sunday, and that certainly helped. Tom Kim said that. And he shot the round of the day on Sunday, and it showed. And I think it got to the point where it's like, all right, is this hold on? For me, I was worried that Sunday would be too much of holding on and not enough shot making and shot performing, which they allowed, obviously, on Sunday. We saw Scotty and others do that as well. So I think you got the best mix of that worked in. They got a huge weather break on Thursday when not a lot of rain fell, and they were able to start way earlier than they wanted to. I also think that wind's a funny thing. I almost think the waves even. I don't have these stats in front of me, but it felt like the waves evened themselves out. You would have thought that Tiger's wave, the late early wave, would have gotten dissed by the conditions, but I almost felt like it was almost harder for the early late folks on Friday because of how much it was windy. So I think that look, chairs being blown over and leaves, you know, making their way through the second cut onto the 18th fairway is not normal for Augusta. So I do think that it played uniquely, but I think it all was it came out really well. I look at these events as did the right person win kind of deal, and the right person clearly won, and the right guy clearly won. This wasn't some gimmick. It wasn't some storm that caused a delay or whatever. It was the right person winning, and the golf course itself on Sunday played great, and that I think truly was the winner, was golfers and the golf course. And I hope people appreciate what they're doing and what they're seeing from Scotty, because you can attest that shot at 90 hit to 2 inches or whatever, that's not normal. That's off a side slope. You're hitting into a slope that's going the other way, and it's the most exposed green in the golf course. Like, that should not happen. And you have to land it on the precise point that it takes the slope back towards the hole. There's a lot that has to be exactly precise there.
That was the difference in the tournament, basically personified as, like, look at Oberg actually made birdie from that ridiculous spot on that shelf above where the hole was on 9. Yeah. But Homa did not pull off that shot that Scotty did, and Morikawa got very greedy on that hole and hit in the bunker, which you absolutely can't do to that hole location, and then compounded his error by leaving it in the bunker and taking a 6, and that was really the end of his tournament. But Scheffler's precision on that shot is basically, like, that's all you need to show somebody. Like, show someone Homa, Oberg, and Morikawa on that hole, and then show them Scheffler, and that's the difference. And he had made a pretty bad bogey on 7, and then birdies 8, 9, 10, just hits the perfect shot on 12, birdies 13. That's championship DNA to do that. It's really, really hard to do that. It's super impressive. And if I could say one more thing, I think people...
You can say many things, Sean. So keep going.
I appreciate that. There's kind of this narrative, and I'm sure you've heard it, that Scheffler is boring.
Yep.
That he's not really that interesting. I think that might be true to a certain extent. I get that, but I don't think watching greatness is boring, no matter who it is. And I think this really sets up interesting storylines moving forward. Every single major, every single big event we have from now on, he's the guy. He's the guy, that's the bar that you have to beat. And it just sets up a really interesting storyline. Every time he's in contention, I think guys are going to really feel it now. I don't want to say it's quite at the Tiger effect level where guys are being intimidated by him to that extent, but it's definitely going to be a factor now when he's in contention. And I think it makes it a lot more compelling when we go to the PGA Championship, U.S. Open, Open Championship, and we're talking about contenders and everything, and Scheffler is the guy. He's the guy who should win. I mean, he's going to be like plus 350 or something to win the PGA Championship, which is just, that's basically, we haven't seen that since Tiger.
The Action Network has his betting odds to win the RBC Heritage this week, which he is still in, by the way. He said yesterday, all I want to do is go back home to Meredith. He is still listed as a player this week in the RBC Heritage at Harbortown. His odds are plus 400.
That's crazy.
And that's an event, and I just want the folks to understand, he is not. It is a signature event. However, he does not have to play it. Does not. There is no rule. Number two, he talked about wanting to go home desperately yesterday. And number three, it's very hard to win back-to-back, except for some guy named him right now. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But you talk about the slam. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. I think it's because he has everything now. And that, I think, is the point, is that he has everything. He has all the tools, and what Phil Kenyon did with his putting gave him that. He now has everything. And is it the, oh, is Tiger on the leaderboard, you know, kind of scaring people level? Maybe not yet, but it's close. It's close. I will say that. It's close. I want to ask you two more questions if you have time, if that's okay, Sean.
Let's do it. Absolutely.
I have a theory about Tiger, and I want your theory. I want your thoughts on it. We have seen time after time since the car accident, he looks great when he shows up and then looks worse and worse and worse as the week goes on. He's only playing majors. He knows these courses. Show up Wednesday.
Right.
Give yourself a shot.
Yeah.
I get it. These are easier walks coming up than Augusta, but still, he looks fine on Sunday and Monday and Thursday, right? Bad, you know, the weather hurt him, obviously, with having to finish that round and it spilled over into Saturday. But I think that he's taking us the wrong way. You know, Rory has tried every which way possible to try to win the Masters. He now has to try every which way possible. And I think part of that could be showing up Wednesday. Come up for the Champions Center, but don't do anything.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was there on Tuesday. He looked great. I watched him for a few holes. He stuffed a couple of approach shots. He looked healthy. He looked really good. And then you see him play on the first two rounds, and he also looked pretty solid through those first two rounds, I would say. I thought he really battled hard on Friday.
Really hard in the wind. Yeah.
And I think he managed himself really well on Friday. And actually, yeah. It'll kind of get lost to time, but he started Saturday pretty well, too, kind of early on. He had made a really nice birdie on 5 to kind of right the ship. And then it was his short putting. He had a sloppy 3-putt on 4 and then what was basically a 3-putt on 6. And I don't know, he just kind of lost momentum and then kind of the health woes. His body was not working the same after that point. But yeah, it is really interesting that to me, he still has that high-end gear.
I agree.
He can drive it. It's not a length issue. I don't think it's a precision issue with his irons. I do think he is really missing, like when he was at his peak, he was the best lag putter in history. And his putting is not the same anymore at all.
And that's reps, in my opinion. That's straight up reps.
Exactly. I would agree with that. I think he struggles with pace a lot of times in these big tournaments. He struggled with it again this time. And I think that kind of, there is a psychological component to it. It's not just purely physical. Like when you're missing short putts, I think that really hurts.
I'm laughing at somebody who has had the psychological effects of missing short putts. Yes, it does get to you big time.
Same here as well. I heard something on No Laying Up's podcast that I thought was interesting, where they one of them was kind of talking about how in 2022, I think Tiger finished like 47th or something. He walked off of the green and he was really, really happy after finishing four rounds in the Masters, and he looked really, really content coming back from that. And then this time they watched him caught the 18th green. He was like stone faced and it wasn't, there wasn't much there. So, I don't know. Just interesting to note. He doesn't want to be a ceremonial golfer, but he's obviously fast approaching being a ceremonial golfer, and some might argue that he's already there. I don't know. It'll just be interesting to see how this all unfolds, because he clearly, his body's not really letting him get to what he needs to get to even really be in serious contention mode. anymore. So
and
it's,
he needs heat, and you're not guaranteed heat in the, you know, all the time.
Yep. Yeah.
And like the Shankit Riv, like that's not Tiger. That's an old man's body that happens to be Tiger Woods. That's not Tiger.
Yeah. You could say that he could go to an open championship and it's an easy walk and maybe he gets a good draw or maybe something happens there, but I don't know. It feels like there was a moment in that 2018-2019 stretch where he really kind of climbed the mountain one more time, and then it feels like we've passed that moment.
I am with you. Sadly, I am with you. I talk about somebody climbing a mountain. Final thing, Oberg. Oh, my God. What a major championship debut. And for Ludvig, you make a Ryder Cup. You take all that momentum, and you show up, and you finish second. And don't feel bad about finishing second because you weren't Captain Scotty Scheffler. The man was on a mission. And he's had everything in front of him. I mean, the dude was in college a year ago, and now he's a superstar. I am with Nance and with everybody else that he's going to be an absolute superstar.
I think he's a future world number one. I mean, I think it's all. I mean, to me, it's right there. I was looking at Data Golf this morning, and I believe, you have to fact check me on this, but he's, I think they had him up to like number four or something crazy. Like he's like already a top five player in the world, basically. So, so I covered him a lot at Texas Tech.
Yeah, number four. You are correct. Number four.
Watched him win the Jones Cup, which is a big amateur event in Sea Island. Followed him all 18 holes there. First of all, super super nice kid, and you could see showing a lot of his personality, smiling a lot yesterday. I think he's great for golf. It's a huge breath of fresh air. His swing is just so repeatable. Just so repeatable. I mean, what an incredible golf swing. And then all the other parts of his game are pretty good. Now, he did finish 51st, I want to say, in strokes gained around the green. And Scotty was first, and that's basically like, that's a four-stroke difference, right? The fact that he was not as good around the greens and some of those feel shots. But you could see him really taking in a lot of information, learning a lot of lessons. He made a few bad mistakes. He took a 7 on 15. I think it might have been like the second or third round. And I think he might have spun one back into the water, and you make those mistakes and you realize, all right, well, that can't happen next time. I have to be over here. I mean, the shot on 11, I don't think that he was trying to go at that pin. I think that was just a bad shot. I think that's just a huge pull in that moment. But obviously you just can't go anywhere remotely close to the left side of that green. But I mean, he's a phenomenal player. I think he's already a world-class player. If someone told me that he won a major this year, I would not be surprised whatsoever. And honestly, he might be Scotty's biggest competition for majors this year. I mean, he's really, really, really good. There's not a lot of holes, and I think he's going to get better over time.
It's a really interesting guy to follow. In my mind, at least, he's already. And for folks out there, like, when you're in that European Ryder Cup team room, right, and like, that's a squad, right? They root for something. You can say anything you want about the U.S. team room problems, but they fight for something. It is clear as day, even when they've lost, they have fought for something. So you get that experience, now major championship experience, you get exposed, as you said, what parts of your game need to be fixed. Oh my gosh. Is that a gift? I mean, that is an absolute gift of a way to come in to your PGA Tour career. And people remember, too, when he won last fall to get in, he won the RSM, I believe? That's an event with very few fans, right? So he went from, this is after the Ryder Cup. So he takes his Ryder Cup lessons. He wins in the PGA Tour, gets the Masters berth all nine yards. So it means that he doesn't even need a lot of fans to have his game show up, you know? Like, that to me says something. When you're able, and we've heard about superstars or whatever, but when your game translates from no fans to the cauldron to major championships to nothing to something, that just means a lot. That stands out to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just when you're hitting the ball 330 in the middle of every fairway, it's like, you don't really need to be like amazing in every other aspect of your game. I mean,
it's effortless power too. It's very like it's very Jake Knapp like. It's just effortless. Yeah. Different swing, but it's very effortless.
It just doesn't seem like it's a swing where a lot of stuff can go wrong. You look at like Jordan or somebody else, and you're like, oh man, there's a lot that's going on there. And
yeah.
Oberg is just like, there's just not a lot going on to this golf swing. I mean, I think you can make a case that he's the best driver of the golf ball in the world right now. And the fact that he did not putt or chip, he didn't really chip well throughout the Masters, the fact that he almost won with that glaring deficiency that's pretty crazy. I mean, the upside is a lot. For that kid.
Yes.
I mean, he's very mature too. He, you know, he stayed in school. He kind of went through the whole program and everything. And, he has so much to learn, but I mean, the upside is crazy. I mean, he's over under majors for him. I know it's so early in his career, but if you're just guessing, four and a half. Yeah. I would say he could have a Rory career. I mean, he is right there in my opinion.
I would love to keep Sean from now until the PGA Championship. But three things. He has to go walk the dog, right?
Yes.
He has work to do and a lovely wife. And number three, it's his birthday. He agreed to come on this podcast on his birthday. So happy birthday.
Your present to me was letting me on your podcast.
Oh. Well, it was my pleasure. You were so hyped this morning. Honestly, folks, the text he sent, you would not know it was his birthday. It's like bleep the birthday. I just want to come on a damn podcast talking about the Masters.
Absolutely. I'm excited for it. After everything that's happened in golf the past couple of years, I was so happy to just have a great tournament to talk about.
Yeah, seriously. No talk of piff coming here. Sean Fairholm, my golf spy, is where you can find him now, but we have no spies on Augusta. Well, there are spies at Augusta, but there's no one spying Augusta. No one spying Scottie Scheffler's golf game right now. That's for sure. So thank you for coming on. It's my pleasure. Go celebrate your birthday. And thank you all for listening to another edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.